to the main line, this inline valves, so that we can go in when we have the shutdown. We can isolate sections of unit 13 and shut the whole thing off. Put a new regulator in on Flamingo there. So, you know, the ball is going to be set for that one. And it's getting ready to be installed probably in a week or so. I'll have to shut down unit 13 for the last time. For the last time, you know that. They upgraded the work that we're doing there. That should be the last time you have to shut it down. So we're doing good there. And then we also have three more regulators to take out. Old ones that we're not going to reuse. We're just going to put a straight pipe in and take the old regulator out. It didn't work anyway. Now, on the pump house, some work was done, some wiring was done on the pump house. Pumps are installed and pumped in. Pump house is complete pretty much as far as the exterior goes, and you know, everything's on the roof and on the work around the building itself. There's electrical panels that are installed. There's some wiring left to do on it, but it's coming along pretty good. There's some minor drainage work on the outside of the building. That needs to be done yet. And the SCADA, that's our supervisory control and data acquisition controls, that they have to be installed too. Everyone working together on that. The remaining streets left over on the east side there are Coyote Hills, Baywood View, near this San Ramon, Wawona, Lower, and Meadow. So it's probably around 7,000 feet of pipe left to go. The main line work will start up on Tuesday, up on Baywood. And that is going to get going again. The Unit 13 crew that has been working there, they're about to, there's some minor things they have to do, but they're going to jump over behind the main line crew and start installing services next week. Probably on Castlewood there. Also, three main meters were installed. On Tuesday. These meters will help us determine where the water is going. And, you know, because our system will be different with the new piping, we're going to have to redo our sample siting plant and talk to the state guy about that. We do all that. But these meters will help us keep track of any potential leaks or problems. It's good to get those in. So we have turned off, I don't know if I told you guys, but we did turn off the old water line on Russell Drive. David Lee, Dean Way, and Hardin Moran. So that's kind of where we're at on the project as far as the work goes.
How many more meters do we have to install? Do you have a sense?
How many more meters?
Yet to go.
Not very many. I don't know exactly.
Between 300 and 400. Oh, I'm muted. Dave, between 300 and 400.
300 and 400.
Okay.
So, that, anybody have any questions on the
structure? Any questions from the board?
Dave, any more news on those additional projects? Has John made any progress with Mazingo on getting information as far as timeline or updated costs?
We talked to John yesterday, and he's working with Brad to get some better costs on those two, Flow Court and the Del Rio projects.
Okay. Any other questions? Kind of next is.
May I?
Go ahead.
Could we put in Carissa now because she has to go?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sure, I forgot about that. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So, I... okay, so, Bob, I'm not really sure what all you wanted, but just kind of an update from everything that's been going on. When we did our first billing, we were getting like 200 calls a day. People just weren't understanding the process. After the second billing, it seems to have gone significantly down, maybe 10 to 15 calls a day. Most of the calls are confusion that people think that these installments are for their water consumption. So most of it is, why have I been up there? Why am I getting this big of a bill? So once we explain to them that these are the installments towards the shareholder fee or the base rate, then they're understanding it and it's better. The other thing is they don't understand how many they're going to get. So we suggested that going forward on these invoices, somewhere on it it'll say, you know, 2 of 6, 3 of 6, so they can see how many installments they have. And then the other thing people are asking about is the disconnect dates. So they aren't sure if our disconnect dates are still in play when we sent them the original letters. And I just let them know that they're not anymore, that we've just kind of put everything on hold until the virus and the lift comes up from the governor. So I don't know if that's something we want to talk about as far as when we get that.
Hi.
When we get that go ahead, if what is the extension we're going to do or how we're going to handle that, because all of the letters that we sent out, the deadlines have already passed. So that's kind of something we need to figure out. Are we going to give them another 2 months, 3 months, or how do we go about that? The last thing is, as of right now, we have, let's see, since as of Thursday, we've had $104,924 come in for payments. Most of that was online, $43,000 and some was checks that were mailed in, but most of it, the $61,000 and the remaining have all been online accounts or calling into that number. So we're slowly starting to shift. Everybody's doing the online, and we're getting fewer checks than in the past years. So that's been a huge help. And the other thing is only 2 people have asked about forgiveness, not necessarily forgiveness, a delay of payment because of the coronavirus. They weren't able to pay right away. So, but that really hasn't been an impact. Only 2 people have questioned it, and they... Lee and I had talked about it, as well as Dave, that as long as we have the entire payment and everything's paid by October 1st, then it's fine. So whether they miss a couple here and there, but then by October 1st everything's paid up, then everything should be okay, and they've been fine with that. Nobody's, you know, really been up in arms or wanting to just completely not pay or anything like that. So everything seems to be going pretty good, especially with the virus, and, you know, nothing's really had a big impact. We do have 20,801 that is past due right now. But I've noticed this last billing, a lot of people are saying, oh, I don't understand. I guess I must have missed that first billing. And then they're just paying both installments now up front. So everybody's getting caught up, and it's starting to work itself out, and things are going pretty smoothly. My only question is, what are we going to do when everything gets back, or what's our lift order? What do I do about the connection times? How much more time are we giving them, or what are we going to do about that?
Okay. Dave, do you want to comment on the connection time?
Unmute, Dave. There you go.
It's open-ended, you know. We don't know when the governor's going to say anything about how loose it could be. But basically what I'm telling the people when they talk to me about it is that the contractors up here are still working. They're still making connections, and you don't have to be here for them to hook your house up to the new water ball. I mean, in some cases, the homeowner might have to be here, yes, but they can still make arrangements with the contractor to, get bids and set up connection times. So it's not like everything's come to a standstill. So I try to tell people that. And I don't know. I mean, I think we can give them a reasonable amount of time if they have a hardship in getting up here. They want to hook it up themselves, and that's fine. But, we can give them, after the governor lifts his order, I don't know, we can give them 3 months, we can give them 6 more months. We prefer to do it quickly, but we just have to see if people are still hooking up right now. So
Dave, how many people have not hooked up?
How many people have not hooked up? Carissa probably knows that better than I do.
We still have quite a bit. Unit 5 and Unit 7, it's not really even made a dent quite yet. Unit 3, I would say about a third. Most of the main zone has, there's only like 5 or 6. Julian Shannon, that was all done. Marilyn, Don, and Helen is pretty good, but I can get everybody the numbers. I can go over and kind of show you what's left and send it out to the board and kind of give you a breakdown of what we have left and what the deadlines were, and so everybody can kind of get a better visual on that.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
Okay.
But we can give them another 3 months. I have no problem with that, but I don't want to do it much longer than that. The longer the extension, the longer we wait. It's time to call people to account. Anything else, Carissa?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Do we have anything else we wanted to talk about?
Any questions?
No, I don't think so.
You know, we changed the format of the billing, as you know. But when the second billing went out, it looked very different than the first one. It had a lot less information on it. It was a little more organized. I'd ask you to, because you all got one, if you favor what we're producing now, let us know. If there's some change that you think would make it simpler, let us know. I don't know how it can be any simpler than it is. We're still battling with some people that that are not familiar with a bi-monthly system, I just, which boggles my mind because they all, you know, by and large, with some exception, they all come from the Bay Area, and that's exactly what exists in the Bay Area with one exception in Brentwood. So we'll keep pursuing this. Carissa mentioned that the number of complaints have dropped, and the word is substantially. Where we're getting hundreds, now we're only getting, we're getting probably less than 20. So I think we're trending into the right place. It'll take people maybe another billing or so to get used to it, and by then it will be fairly mundane. Carissa, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Have fun. Bye.
Bye-bye. Future, future employee.
Right.
Anything else on the USDA project or the meter, matter of meters?
Yes. You wanted this, Cover and Dave spoke about a letter?
Yeah, let's put it in there now. By way of introduction, Bill Cover came up with some interesting ideas about monies that are being passed out by the federal government. And I'll let him explain what it is. And Dave has been checking into some of his working partners and a couple of state organizations and on the issue of are there any federal monies we can secure to help our loan obligation. So with that, we'll start with Bill Cover. And Bill, you're muted.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Sure can.
So Dave and I met yesterday, and we wrote out, I wrote out some notes. But basically the concept is that Dave talked to existing programs, like he talked to Michelle Farrell at CRWA, and also a USDA person named Kevin Demers. And under the current legislation, there's not like a forgiveness of any USDA loan for our company or our organization unless there was a 20% revenue loss due to COVID. And then he also talked to Mike Starensky about the CARES Act, and there was nothing in the current, the two legislations that have passed for water. So basically what I'm thinking now is that there's going to be another appropriation bill, and a lot of these appropriation bills, even though they're under the COVID Act, the House of Representatives, sometimes they can add different projects that are needed for their communities on these, because it is an appropriation bill. If you remember, the famous one was the John F. Kennedy Center that John Kerry and others lobbied to get $25 million for, which was not COVID-related, but it was in the same bill. So what I've done is I've taken notes about what our argument would be if we, as a team, decide to approach our House of Representatives person. So if you want me to go over those now or in the executive session, Bob?
Let's do it now because we don't have an executive session planned.
Okay. All right. So basically what we would do is we would send a letter to our House of Representatives and maybe make a phone call to one of his assistants. My recommendation is not to approach him directly, but try to explain to him what our situation is. So basically the points that Dave and I talked about and I've talked to others a little bit about is just to explain what the original loan was, purpose was. And so it was a major water facilities improvement project that upgrades the main lines and provides new service locations. And this was done in part because we needed to meet AWWA standards. So it was a catch-up project. So that puts us up to the current regulations and water standards. So my argument is a more of an economic argument for the area and our customers. And so what what I propose is we write out a summary of, you know, how many customers we serve. So we serve 1,709 customers, plus plan to serve new houses as they are constructed to probably around 2,000 customers, as, you know, as the area develops. And one of the problems in the area is all the homeowners in Calaveras County are experiencing increased costs out of their control. And the main one, obviously, is the fire protection insurance. And also the periodic power outages where some homes have to purchase generators, especially if they have a need to power medical equipment during power outages. So, and pretty much what we would need to do is find out an estimate of how much the insurance costs have increased on the average homeowner, and then the number of houses that aren't insured, and how many of them have to go to the California. So basically, this is an increase in cost. And then we would explain that the, if you take the increase in cost of water per month, it is not alarming if it's considered independent, separate from all the other cost increases like the power and the insurance. So the relief we're asking for is minor for each homeowner, but each incremental cost reduction improves the local economy, which is based on tourism. So that's the high level of why we would ask him to consider legislation to design monies to stimulate this part of the economy with paying off the loans. So the numbers that we guessed at, and this would have to be completed by someone that's a lot more astute than I am with the numbers, but we calculate an average of $236 a year increase over the next 40 years, which is $9,440 per household. So if you multiply 944 by 1709, that's $16 million that is going to be used to pay back the federal government, and that's money that's not going to be redistributed into the local economy. So if you look at it over the long the period of the loan, then you know you have some real numbers there. Again, even though it's incremental, but if you look at how Congress has dealt with the COVID, I mean, the $1,200 check to everybody, you know, in the country didn't solve everybody's problem. It was just an incremental help. So we're asking for incremental. So, and we think the loan will be $12.26 million and if we finish in the third quarter, something like that.
Yes.
But then we would, you know, put some more demographic stuff about Arnold's annual income versus the average. If we could estimate the number of people that are on fixed income and the age of the communities, a little bit about the housing shortage in California. And then the other part is where I need help from you guys. Is, so the loan, if the loan is really to catch us up with the current standards, then it's cost prohibitive for us moving forward. So, like, it diminishes our ability to raise additional funds without government support for future improvements to the water system. So water is a scarce commodity in California, and increases in the storage capacity are difficult to realize because of the regulations, you know, particularly environmental groups, like you can't build a new dam or reservoir. And currently the state doesn't really manage water efficiently, in my opinion. That's not the board's opinion, obviously. But we, as a mutual water company, you know, we have our obligation to our customers. But we also have the potential to be a backup water supply to another district if necessary. I know that Calaveras Water District supplied us water during the drought. So there's kind of a relationship there, even if there's internally it may not seem like it is, but on the outside, we do cooperate with the other water companies. And I think the other thing was the fire hydrants were installed under this program, and they were there to, you know, for fire protection. And the strategy there is that fire hydrants are supposed to reduce insurance costs for fire protection. But I don't think we've realized this, mainly because of the fires like the Paradise Fire. So we could, so the, in other words, the biggest argument is it prohibits us from moving forward and maintaining with changes to water management in California and in the federal government. So it would be hard for us to go back to our customers and ask for another monthly increase, even though this was small. So what, the idea is the legislation, if they would put in appropriation, would catch us up, you know, financially with where we should be or where we'd like to be. So that's the kind of the argument I have right now. It'd have to be pressure tested. I mean, but it would be up to the board to decide whether you want to, I mean, I'll need help from other people, obviously. This is pretty much Dave and I putting this together yesterday, so. But anyway, we should, don't have to make a decision today, but this is what I'm thinking. But we should, I think it's good for us to at least know, let them know that we exist. You know, and
let me ask a question of Andrew and Dave. How are we at the moment in compliance with state water board compliance requirements?
We're in good shape. Yeah, we're in good shape with them.
So in helping Bill out with you know, this particular project, is there anything on the horizon that we need, you know, we could throw into the bucket of reasons for government support and help?
Well, Bill made a good point to future upgrades that we need to do, because we have the loan, it limits our ability to go out. Of course, we could get more loans, but we don't really want to do that. That's one thing. We're not hurting as far as the State Water Resources Control Board regs. We're on top of those right now. But there's some issues with, you know, our, if we were ever to be taken over by CCWD, there might be some, you know, there's some parts of our system that are still, that might need to be fixed up. So, I don't know, we may approach it that way.
Well, specifically, what we would have to do, Andy, is, that's why I said I would need help on this, is we would have to look at proposed legislation in Congress and proposed legislation in California state houses, and any proposed regulations by, you know, administrative, like in EPA, that haven't been passed. So, I mean, it's good that we're currently up to date, but it's, I think it's, I anticipate that there'll be more regulation, even though right now there's a tendency to reduce regulation, but I haven't seen that in the environmental area.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know if you guys have or not, but yeah.
If I could jump in with a suggestion too, is that I agree regulations are likely to get more strict in the future. I think it's only going to be an uphill battle on that front. One thing that you might want to do is, I believe the water company is a member of Cal Mutuals.
Yes.
And that, looking for money and knowing what pots of money are available, is one of the specific reasons that associations like that exist. So you may want to talk to your representative at Cal Mutuals and see what pots of money are out there, what plans are available from other water companies, and team on an effort like this if there are other people trying to do the same thing in a similar situation, because that helps to show the need of what you're asking for.
That's a good idea.
And I would think that, Bill, I would think that specifically one reason that we're installing more hydrants, and we started the project before CAL FIRE came out and declared that the Arnold area is in the top 12 or the top 7, I forget, parts of California that are most susceptible to the paradise-like conditions. Bill, I don't know if that would help our cause. We're in a high-risk area, and the water company is doing everything it can to minimize that. And if that could get us some points. What you're talking about is, it used to be called pork, and I'm sure it still is, where the elected officials try and get a little something for their own districts that get, you know, buried deep in a congressional bill like this. We would need, of course, to come up with an amount. You know,
go ahead.
No, originally we were thinking that our thought process, well, maybe they could forgive the USDA loan. And the focus now, and the numbers you mentioned, by the way, when we were initially looking at the loan amount, it was about $9,700 a parcel.
So we were close, yeah.
Yeah, one way to handle it from that end was that everybody had to pay $97 up front. And we didn't think that would happen. So now we're into the loan process. We're into the loan. We've proven we have a back trail on taking care of business with the loan, improving a system, improving its firefighting capabilities, and we can parlay what we've done into a request. Hell, we have nothing to lose except a stamp to ask. I mean, the asking part's the most difficult for us, but it doesn't cost a thing.
Well, I mean, I think you're right about those comments about the fire hazard. I think also the age of the community, fixed income. I think the other thing is I pay more in homeowners insurance and fire insurance than I do in real estate taxes. So basically, for me to insure my house, it's about one in a half times what I pay in real estate taxes. So, and I'm not even sure the insurance company that I pay to meets any standards of an insurance company. It's more like a risk bond that the broker sells to, you know, Wall Street or somebody. But if you read the fine print, they say in there they may not have enough funds. But if you want to get a mortgage, you got to have some type of insurance. So, so that's another part we do pay tax dollars, and I'm not sure whether or not Calaveras County gets all its money back. If you look at some of the other districts, I mean, you call it pork, but I remember Gerald Ford called it log rolling, you know, when he was in that log rolling legislation. So they don't do it as much now, but they still do it. I mean, I think it's legitimate in this, you know, we're not asking for something that's not reasonable, but I mean, if we're forward thinking, then it makes a lot of sense because of the fire hazard and the age of the community and just the overall. If you look at the average income in Calaveras County versus the rest of California, you know, it would not be considered a wealthy county, at least. No. But I mean, we like it that way, but.
Yeah. And Bill, on that point, there are some specific needs testing that each of the different programs does, and they're different between the state and the federal funding. I don't know how to do the calculations. I've never done them, but I certainly have clients that do them. You can, if it's not something that water company staff can do, you can certainly hire a consultant at a very reasonable price who goes and chases this money, and they can do the needs testing, and they can tell you where you fall. I do know that each program is different, so in some cases they're going to look at the water company service area versus Calaveras County as a whole, which, you know, may be different than the median income of the county as a whole or even Arnold. And so it just really depends on the loan program, and you could fall in different places on the scale depending on which program you're looking at.
Right.
Get wildly different results.
Right. So if we say our customers, I don't know what our average income, but if somebody challenges that, you know, these are wealthy people,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the point is if they spend it on the loan, they're not reinvesting it into the restaurants at Arnold or whatever. So the money doesn't get turned back over. So we can make those kind of arguments. I think the one program I did see is, say, if I was a farmer and I dig a well and put my own water system in for the farm because there's no public utilities, the USDA will loan you the money, and then after a certain period of time, they forgive the loan for the farmer. So those programs are already exist for rural housing and rural water that aren't on utilities. So it's still the same concept as that. But I agree with you. I couldn't find a program in place. If there is a program in place, it would be up to the, my thinking is the state legislation, I mean the Congressman McClintock, his staff should be able to tell us whether or not there's an existing program if we ask for it. I mean, if there's, they would know better than anybody.
Yes.
I mean, because I think I agree with you. My issue with going with to all our special interest groups or lobbyists is that if we bring up something like this, then all of a sudden you got 20 companies will be asking for the same thing, and so our probability of success would be lower, where this would be considered a small amount of money. If you look at the grants that other states get for these kind of developments, the numbers are huge compared to what we're asking for, or what we would be asking. So, again, it's only going to be an incremental help to our customers, but it's kind of the spirit of moving forward anyway.
Nothing to lose by asking.
Well, anyway, anybody has, you guys have my email. If you have any ideas, you can call me or and let me know if you want me to keep working on it. So,
absolutely. In fact, you and Dave, and if it means getting someone to help craft a letter to the congressman, the people that work for a congressman love to do projects like this because they get brownie points if they're successful. And I don't see any reason we shouldn't ask for the money. We're not asking, I don't think it'll be in the form of a grant, but more in the form of forgiveness. Or maybe one hand washes the other on something like this. I don't know how the intricacies of this thing work. But I know that there are federal dollars that are being allocated strictly for water companies and water projects. And with that in mind, I think it'd be worth our while to compete for.
So I did this once like 40 years ago. I was living in a small town in Virginia, and they didn't have any recreation parks, so we kind of went and asked for a federal grant just to build a park and a small dam with water for fishing, and they did it, you know. They
sure.
Put the legislation in, so it's sort of like you never know if you get lucky or not. But anyway, I think it's a reasonable argument. It passes the red face test. I mean, I'm not embarrassed to pitch it, so.
Hell no. I say we pursue it.
Jeff, anybody else?
Other comments from the board? Anyone opposed to anything like this? I would think not.
We should go for it, I think. The worst they could say is no, right?
Well, that's it. If they say no, you try another approach.
Yep.
Apparently,
you know, they have... Congress wants to give the money away. They want it to go through a worthwhile project. We have one. Why not ask for it?
It'll do more to, I think we owe it to our ratepayers to make the inquiry, and I'm sure you all agree with that. Anything else on this matter?
I'll just say that I'm willing to help on any of the financials or number side if you guys want me to look anything over or provide input there. I'll probably be back up in the next 2 to 3 weeks. So I'm not sure of your timing, but that's when I'll be back in person. But I can also help just over the computer. So.
No, we'll definitely need somebody.
All right.
Yeah, definitely need help on anything we put in the letter. We have to. We don't have to, but it's a good idea to have a source document for the numbers that we put in there. Like, we want it to be factual, extremely factual. Like,
right.
Well, one of our goals will be Bill, to secure someone from McClintock's office that agrees with what we're trying to pursue. So they love to work on those things. And do you know McClintock, by the way?
I don't know him. I mean, I was a Republican in my younger years and active. And I was in the state delegate for the Massachusetts Republican governor when he got elected. So I got a little bit of peripheral, but I don't have a problem contacting his office.
No.
The board wants me to do it. So.
Absolutely. Unless the board feels to the contrary. I say go for it. We have nothing to lose.
Right. Andrew, you're our legal analyst. You're comfortable with this? You think?
Yeah, I have no objection to it. Okay. I don't have a lot of involvement with clients in chasing money. This is typically something that if they're big organizations, they have somebody to do it. That's sort of beyond what the water company is going to do. But I can provide support as needed, but I'm not as familiar with pots of money as others.
Well, the only thing I learned from federal grants and federal loans is if you don't ask, you don't get anything. That's it. That was the one thing that I learned in 20 years of dealing with it. All right. Anything else on this matter? Long-range planning?
All right.
You'll have plenty of time.
I'm not sure if everybody has the chart. What's that?
So you're going to have plenty of time to be doing baseball for quite some time.
So I guess, I don't know if everybody has charts in front of them, or I'll just try to speak to them as best I can so that in case you don't have them in front of you, you can hopefully follow along. Page 17 of the package is the first chart that talks about our budgets and our interim loan status. So shows Mazingo, including all their change orders through 14, which was their latest one. The contract budget is now at $8,658,904. Their actuals through their progress payment 18, which was through April, was $7,007,000. So their contract budget remaining is about $1.65 million. Their last progress payment request was pretty small. It was only like $11,000 from what it said in the MC engineering report. So including retainage, Mazingo is about 85% spent. Their change order 14 tasks amounted to $98,654. I have a page that shows what those include. Coming up. So based on the analysis that we've done over the last month or so, it looks like the potential remaining change orders amount to about $445,000. If you calculate unknown change orders that can potentially still happen at 3%, that's another $39,000. So the total potential is about $484,000. that does not include A1B. We decided at our last board meeting that based on, you know, everything that's in front of us, we didn't have the resources to fund that through the USDA project. MC Engineering, through their May bill, their contract budget, which now includes amendments 6, is about $2,058,000. Their team actuals are about $1.9 million, with all their Amendment 6 expenditures included. So that leaves about $147,000. Their potential scope, which I'll show in a couple pages, amounts to about $47,000. With CoBank, as of their statement at the end of April, the total loan amount to date is $7,734,714. The actual interest paid to date is $242,000 roughly. The estimated remaining interest, which would take us all the way through August, is about $92,000. As of May 18th, we've requested reimbursement for about $939,000 of MC Engineering's costs. And so I'll show that in a little more detail on the page coming up as well. So the total estimated interest through the end of the contract is about $334,500. Just a interesting note, if you look at the interim loan interest rate in April of last year, it was at 4.49%. And if you look at it at the end of April this year, it's down to 2.44%. So the interest rate has dropped quite a bit, which has been helpful and has reduced our total interest that we'll take. Just want to touch on a letter that Dave received from CoBank back in April. They talk about that they sent him a side letter agreement which allows for the adoption of a replacement interest rate. So through that letter and the backup that came with it, they are potentially going to a new interest rate index. But if you read through it, the soonest it will happen is the end of 2021. So our interim loan with them will be definitely closed out prior to that, so that that change in the interest rate index will not affect us. Moving on to the next page, it shows the change order 14 details. There were four areas that were included in change order 14 from Mazingo. Installing four OmniMaster flow meters, replacing 6 gate valves, some additional pot holding that took place where unidentified water mains were in conflict with the construction. So they had to do quite a bit of work to correct that.
Is that potholing, that's a pretty big number for potholing. Is that over the life of the project, or is that over just a recent period?
That was just recently, right, Dave? The potholing?
Yes, the that was for the last year. That was for the beginning of the project. They had to do a lot more potholing than they anticipated. So we negotiated with them. They had to do a lot of extra potholing, and so we negotiated with them a price for the additional work. And we have a lot of water lines in the street on the on the other side of Brand there, where they finished most of the work. So not the case on this new work they're doing, but so with all the lines in the road, they had to do a lot of extra potholing. That's why it took a long time to negotiate that out, because we don't want to pay them, you know, for potholing that they should be doing anyway. So we came to an agreement, and that's the number we came to.
Okay. Thank you. The last item on this change order was existing booster pump and colors match the pump curve. So in total, those four areas amounted to the $98,654. If you go to the next chart, it's a review of our allocated budget versus our estimated costs. And this is a chart I showed in our last meeting. And so I think I updated it based on all the changes that have occurred and the information that I have that I'm going with. But our USDA funding is $12,225,744. And so if you look at the Mazingo and MC Engineering contracts, all their amendments and change orders included, Mazingo's at $8,658,904, MC Engineering's at $2,057,801. So their total contract value currently is $10,716,705. Down below that, I show a table of all the additional scope changes that can occur. The first area deals with the changes that were shown in MC Engineering's Amendment 6, but they did not request the dollars for those at that time. So it included installing the gate valves in Unit 13, the Omni master meters, sample stations, small dollar values, and then A1C, which is the water treatment plant valves and box with the pipelines for $14,175. All of those are already in the contract value for Mazingo, except A1C, which is the $191,565. So that area amounts to about $207,000 of additional changes. I'm not going to read through every one of these, but included in this list are Wawona, Oracourt, and Del Rio. So I know that John is working with Mazingo now on, I think the cost for these was received recently from Mazingo, so I think the costs are pretty accurate. I think they're trying to iron out what type of schedule delays or increases to the schedule might occur from that. But one other note, and I don't know, Dave, if John has found out anything more or if you have from the USDA, but last time I was involved in any discussions with John and Dave, they mentioned that adding Oracourt and Del Rio might be an issue with USDA since it wasn't included in the PERS, and there would be environmental work that needed to be done. So has John found out anything further, Dave?
John has talked to Mike Strinsky about it. He doesn't think that there'll be a lot of environmental work that has to be done there. So it looks feasible right now, talking to USDA, that we could get them in, get these two things into the project. We don't know the exact, numbers on that yet, what it would cost for the environmental work. But we're working on that.
Okay. I did see a schedule that Sharon sent me, and it looked like in there they were projecting those additional projects in the August 4th through August 24th time frame. So I know that John's trying to work with them on the schedule to, you know, to reduce the timeline a little bit, but we'll see how that ends up. So anyway, the bottom line of all those potential change orders, which include unknown change orders at 39,000, and it also includes potential county issues with repaving some of the road up by the spoil site. There's 90,000 in there to potentially handle that. So the bottom line is to be about 484,000 of additional Mozingo contract value and about 47,000 for MC Engineering, totaling about 531,000. That would bring us up to 11,247 against our allocation of 12,226, which would leave a balance of funding of about 949,000. Then we have all of our purchases that we've made through our, up to this point, through our operating budget. You can see the list there, all the meters and transmitters, PRV, sample stations, master meters, all of those are in there, and plus the estimated interim loan interest of the $334,500. So all of those add up to another $925,000, which would bring us to $12,173,000. So it's getting close to our total allocation, which is about $53,000 under. So hopefully over the next couple of weeks, we'll also point out that there may be some issues with approving the PRVs, and Dave, I don't know if you've heard any more on that, but because we didn't go out to bid on those, there may be some issue with USDA approving that purchase.
Yeah, I'll have an answer for you guys next week on that.
Okay.
We've been talking to John or Mike Strinsky about it. I think we have to draft a letter to him, but I'd like to let you know next week on that.
So overall, you know, and Sharon, I don't know if you know of anything else that I don't have listed on here, anything that would impact these values that I'm estimating. You're muted.
It's better to hear me if I'm make up what you want. So there is one. So Mozingo has the right to request additional days because they weren't able to work on the main line from December through April. So they've already submitted a request for weather days for January, which is like 22 days. And they have yet to submit for February and March and April. So if you add the 22 days, and if you add in all the days, you probably end up in like October. And I know John is working to try to minimize it, the amount of days we give them, but they are entitled to it, to those days by the specs. But that would impact our interest payments, right? If the contract wasn't done, if the construction wasn't done by, right now the schedule they gave us shows early September, but that is, you know, they're entitled to go past that date. So, so that's the only thing. And the Wawona project, I think they figured out that it's actually within the scope of the existing contract, so that it's a small amount, that'll go away. But the biggest thing I see is the potential for the project being extended a couple more months.
Okay, so that could end up being about $20,000 a month or so. Well, if we get any updates on that, Dave, make sure you keep us up to date. I should be back up there in two to three weeks, so it'll be a lot easier once I get up there.
And I think they'll know, they said they'd have costs on Borough Court and Del Rio, hopefully by the end of this coming week, so next Friday. I'm giving them to like probably Monday or Tuesday the following week, but then we should have firm numbers from Mazingo on what that will cost, assuming USDA lets us put it in the project, so.
Okay.
Karen and Tom, can I add one thing? You probably know this, but on the delay days, if they are extended out, and it sounds like they do get the delay day, even if there's not an issue there, but if you do tell them to get it done faster to avoid the interest, that is a possibility. You can't do that. You just have to pay them for the acceleration. So you might have to do a cost-benefit analysis of and determine whether telling them to accelerate is worth it to save on the interest, and it might be.
Right.
Now, did you say that it was roughly $10,000 a month additional interest?
$20,000.
So a delay to October wipes out the $53,179.
Right.
Yeah, so... You know, I think to Andrew's point, anything we could do to, you know, incent them to accelerate without spending $20,000 a month might be worth the effort.
Right. I agree.
Right. And USDA wants, they don't want us to leave any money on the table. You know, they want us to use every bit of that $12.26 million, or I probably rounded up, $12.172 million. So they don't want us leaving $50,000 out there not used. So, you know, we were kind of looking like, is there any smaller projects we could get done? But then it depends on how fast the Mazingo can work. So, and John thinks, and you all know John, he thinks that Mazingo doesn't want to delay, they want to get everything done. But, you know, I don't know.
Sooner than later.
Right, so.
Any other questions on that?
Yeah, I had a question on the bottom of page 17 in the statement about requesting reimbursement of $900,000. Excuse me. To pay MCE.
I'm not. Where are you talking about?
On the bottom of page 17.
That total, the $925,000, is not just for MC Engineering.
Actually, none of it's for MC Engineering. It's all for us.
Yeah, that is our material costs.
Okay, so the note's just incorrect. All right, I thought that was a lot of money from one engineering company.
Yeah.
Any other questions, comments?
All right,
Tom.
So the next page, I just tried to lay out some projected eligible USDA reimbursements. So the projected as if we look at the values that are on that page I just showed, projected total MC engineering costs are about $2.1 million. They've already been reimbursed for their 2016 costs, their 2017 costs, and a couple months ago they got reimbursed for the January 2018 costs. And I believe Lee just submitted another one for February, March, and April of 2018 of another $200,735. And the next line I just put on there is a guess. Over the next few months,
before we reached the end of the construction contract, I estimated that, you know, we would get reimbursement for MC Engineering's May, June, and July 2018 costs, which are about $132,000. So the CUME reimbursable balance that we would have left at the end of construction would be about $1,033,000. The projected reimbursable parts costs that we've incurred, you can see there are meters and transmitters, $465,000, the PRVs, sample stations, and Omni Master meter purchases, so about $590,000 worth of reimbursements there. If the reimbursable interest comes to the $334.5, the total potential reimbursements at the end of construction would be about $1,957,000. Any questions on that? So, on the next page, just options that I just threw on the table for allocation of those reimbursements. If you read through the information that Lee sent out on the audit, you notice in there the audit control deficiency number 3, which was there last year too, but it's there again. Talking about the capital reserve, so they just, their finding was that we don't contractually have a requirement to have a capital reserve, but they noted that currently there are not enough unrestricted cash reserves nor a capital budget in place to support unexpected shortages for the project. They recommend establishing a capital reserve policy. If you remember back to January of last year, we actually adopted the capital, the asset reserve policy in our January board meeting. So what was approved in that reserves fund policy with the fund target levels showing at the bottom of this page. So we have our restricted reserves with the USDA and emergency reserve of 100,000, capital asset reserves 346,000, and then operating reserves of 272,000. So a little over $800,000 worth of fund targets in the fund policy, the reserves fund policy. So that's definitely the end.
You froze.
An area that based on all of this previous discussion, we're getting.
Tom, can you hear me?
Yes.
You're cutting out. You know, we lost you there for a few seconds.
He needs to pay his Comcast internet bill.
Well, that's probably the case, yeah.
Yeah, our problem is here, we don't have Comcast.
So, oh.
Yeah, it's the amount of bandwidth that you get isn't very good. So.
Problem there is you get scorpions.
Yeah. So anyway, what I mentioned, and I don't know how much you didn't hear, but through the reimbursements that we get, I think our first the first thing that we need to take care of is funding this reserves policy. So, and once we get to the end of the contract and see how everything falls out, make that decision.
Well, we are committed to that already, are we not?
Right.
Yeah, okay, so that's a matter of identifying the... You have it down at 801,000?
Right.
Okay.
So another option is that we can consider once we get there is starting a reserve account towards funding the asset management plan requirements. And I'll go through the next several charts that will provide a lot of details that still need to be passed out through the Long Range Planning Committee and with some recommendations to bring back to the board. But based on the data that shows in the asset management plan, if you look at the next 10 years, we've got about $566,000 worth of asset replacements that, according to the asset management plan, would need to be funded. And if you look at the following 10 years after that, up to 2040, there's another $3.7 million that would need to be funded. A large part of that is Unit 13 Cypress Point area mainline replacements. So, should we consider allocating a portion of our USDA replacement reimbursements to get a head start in funding our long-term capital asset upgrades and replacements? So that's a question we can ask ourselves, you know, once we get to the end of the contract. So based on our long-term finance, how our long-term financials play out, you know, getting a head start on our on funding our asset management replacements could minimize the impacts of potential future rate increases and assessments.
Very true.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I plan to discuss a lot of what's showing in today's package with the Long Range Planning Committee over the next few weeks, and developing some strategies on different ways that we could go about funding the asset management plan.
Okay.
Go a couple pages further here. It starts getting into a lot of the data that came out of the asset management plan. On page 24 of the package, I show a table that shows the overall mainline replacement costs for today's value and the cost to replace at the end of their projected life. You can see that there for the mainline and all the different parts to the mainline replacement, the house services, valve replacement, hydrants, and all that. That value comes to a little over $36 million at the end of life. You look at the water treatment plant, the wells, tanks, booster pumps, PRVs, and all that. The end of life replacement value is a little over $11 million. So the total replacement value is about $24 million. The cost to replace value is about $47 million. Those values do not include soft costs yet. I'll get into that in a couple charts. But soft costs are the planning, engineering, and contingency that would be required on some of the assets. At the bottom of this page, I just showed some typical useful life examples. So based on the data showing in the asset management plan, you can see there when their end of their useful life occurs. Main lines is 90 years, meters 18 years, and so forth. Wellheads 4 years. So you can see the length of their life of each and what these values were calculated based on these the number of years shown.
Where did those numbers, those years come from? Do you know?
John, the engineer, John Pedry, had some database that he was using. I'm not sure what it was. Do you know any more information on that, Dave?
Yeah, well, he used basically the AWWA life expectancy database, but he also adjusted that with his own experience in, you know, his own experience in these matters. So, you know, it's an estimation.
Yeah,
but
MCE provided those numbers.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. So the next couple pages, they're in here for reference. There's a lot of numbers on them. Page 25, it talks about the time phase mainline replacement cost. So this page shows the actual years where the replacements are occurring. Takes it down to the next level of detail, and it shows how many dollars are in each of the different mainline categories, the mainline house services, valves, and so forth. So you can see by year and the cum amount on the far right of what it would be in those years. So I'll just mention that in 2021, that $216,400 assumes that Borocort and Del Rio and Snowflake to Del Rio, which is A1B, that those do not get done under the USDA contract. If we end up getting those approved and included in the USDA contract, the only one that would remain would be A1D. In 2040, that large amount is for the Unit 13 Cypress Point area that is not currently being done, but it would be due for replacement at that time. You move to the next page, it's even a lot more detail. It gives the timeline of which years all the water treatment plant, wells and tanks and booster pumps and all that, when they reach the end of their life and they would need to be replaced. So it gives all the details with the cum as well. So you can see there at the end of 10 years, for all these categories, we're looking at about $272,000 of replacement costs. And again, these are not including soft costs yet. And I'll get into that in a few pages.
Questions, comments?
Pardon me?
I am asking if there are any questions or comments.
Okay.
Okay.
So the next page, I get into estimated soft costs. So at the time of our last meeting, I brought up the fact that the asset management plan showed soft costs on every asset. Every asset in the plan at 30%. You know, I brought up the fact that if you read through and look at all the assets, there's a lot of them that don't require planning, engineering, and contingency. And so the amounts were, you know, astronomical based on their 30% burden that they were putting on all assets. So you can see there that soft costs for the water distribution system amounted to $10.8 million. And $3.3 million for the treatment plant and appurtenances. So over $14 million in soft costs. So Dave and Billy and I sat down, talked through it. They agreed that there's a lot of the assets that don't require soft costs and that the soft costs estimated at 30% are too high. If you look at the soft costs through our USDA contract to date, they're running about 20%. So that's based on the charts that I'm presenting. They're based on my recommendation of going with the 20% for the assets that do require soft costs. The next little section there shows, based on Dave and Billy's input, the areas that would require soft costs. So it just gives you an overview For the water distribution system, it's basically all the assets. But in some of the other areas, you don't really require the planning, engineering, and contingency on all the assets. So it does show some of the assets in those areas that will require. So based on applying the 20% to all the assets that are now identified by Dave and Billy, it brought the soft cost down to 7.2 for the distribution system and about 400,000 for the water treatment plant and the pertinences. So down from 14 million down to 7.6 million. Mm-hmm. We move to the next page. Now I'm showing the distribution system and all the other asset areas all in one summary chart, and now it does also include the soft costs. So you can see there, in 2030, for all the assets, including soft costs, the total amount not needed by 2030 is $566,000. So, I mean, if you look at it just straight line, that would be about $57,000 per year that we would need to set aside to get to that. If you look 20 years out to 2040, we have that large mainline project that would occur in Unit 13. So the cum cost in 20 years would be $4,546,000 roughly. So to get there, we would need over $200,000 per year.
Wow.
That's just one way to look at it, but obviously we're gonna work through this and analyze our different options and talk through that with the long range planning committee and decide what type of plan would best work for us. Down at the bottom of the page, I show the areas that would be the primary upgrades that would occur in the first 10 years. Again, both Boro Court and Del Rio, if they get completed under the USDA project, those would come up here. Any questions on this page?
Any questions from the board? No.
Moving on to the next couple pages here, I just tried to highlight the significant replacements or upgrade costs for each of the areas, so you can just see which years and the items and dollar values that make up that data that I was showing in the table.
Okay.
So that you can see 2040 for the water distribution system is the next large mainline project that's going that will be needed. The majority of the main lines, 18 million out of 2110, those are all the main lines that are currently being replaced this year with a 90-year life. Next page, 30. There's just details there on the booster pumps and PRVs. The meters, the plan says that we need to replace our meters every 18 years. So this shows the years that our meters would need to be replaced and the dollar values based on those end of year, based on the inflation and cost of money and all that. Next page, 31, another area that Dave and Billy and I, and Sharon was there too, we discussed table 7 in the plan that talks about not the large capital reinvestments that are showing on all the other tables, but smaller items that were predictive and preventative and emergency maintenance that you would budget annually. So Dave and Billy went through this table, and they identified items that they feel that they just replace as needed. We don't necessarily need to budget them on an annual basis. Some of them you don't need to replace for 2 or 3 years. So what I've shown there is a check mark next to the item that budgeted annually. I circled the amounts. So at the end of the table, the next page, instead of the $17,000 to $21,000 per year, it amounted to about $9,400. So this will also need to be calculated into our asset management plan reserves. So I have a note down there that the meters that are shown at the bottom of page 31, those are already accounted for in the other table, showing the dollar amounts each 18 years when the meters are replaced. So the first one would be in 2038, it'd be right around 500,000 for that replacement. So page 33, path forward, just need to finalize analysis and validation of all the asset replacement items and values. So that table 7 showed the short-term upgrades and replacements, so those will be budgeted and expanded on a yearly basis. Should be probably reforecasted every year, not every 5 years, but the plan said every 5 years. The long-term upgrades, as everyone knows, will consist of the major system-wide capital improvements and will require us to set aside capital reserve funds so that as they accumulate over time, you'll have dollar amounts available to do those upgrades. So based on that final analysis, I plan to develop funding plan options that will meet our long-term strategic financial goals. One thing that they mentioned in the asset management plan is that a lot of agencies will base their plan to account for approximately 60% to 80% of the projected replacement costs and rely on other future funding sources for the balance. So, you know, that will be part of our discussion and potentially put into the options that we consider and bring forward. So, as I mentioned, over the next month or so here, I'll be putting together some options that that I have thought of that I'll review with the Long Range Planning Committee, see if they have any other options to discuss. So we'll discuss all of those, and hopefully in the next 1 to 2 months we'll bring back some recommended options for the board to consider on the best way to fund the asset management.
Excellent. Questions or comments from the board?
So I have a question that if the cost of the PRVs isn't paid for out of the USDA loan, do we have funds to pay for those this year?
We've already purchased those.
Okay. So we're just hoping to get reimbursement out of the loan, but if we don't, we're still covered.
Right.
Okay.
Other questions or comments? We take about a 3-minute break. If you don't need it, I do. Tom, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Nice job, Tom.
Thanks. Great work, Tom. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Good for another 1,000 miles.
Got a leak. Can't find it.
No, no, your water system.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh.
Yeah, they can't find it.
No.
So he's coming back Monday.
So mine was already business. David Hicks.
The office generator has been installed and it's operational now. So. It's a 22 kW generator, and the cost is around $13,000. And so we're now ready for the upcoming ESPS events that we know will be happening. The weather's already starting to heat up, so it could happen if we get a big wind event, or maybe a small wind event, I don't know, but... we're ready for it.
Hey, Dave, is that one of those generators that automatically comes on if the power goes off?
Yes.
So run on propane?
Yes, it's on propane. So my thought on that is that we'll have to manage it and... if an event is coming up or if we have a sudden power outage, we don't have to have that thing come on every time the power goes out at night or something. You know, we don't want it using up all the propane in the tank if we're not even in the office. So we're going to have to just kind of manage that and see how that works out. I mean, there's times the power goes out. We don't need the generator to come on necessarily, so we're watching. We'll be having to monitor that.
Questions or comments? Item next is the audit, and you have copies of the audit and its results. Dave, you want to... any comments, or Lee, any comments about the audit?
I have one. My comment is that Lee worked really hard on getting all the information that Atherton needed. Sometimes it was kind of difficult to gather some things, and she worked very hard, and I think we all should be proud of her work on that. Because the audit turned out really, really good, and it's a statement to her quality of Lee's work.
Well, thanks.
Okay.
Can you guys turn your volume down a little bit? It's feeding back through your echo.
Well, not if both of us want to talk at the same time.
Are there any questions about the audit? Comments? Hearing none. Item next. Any other old unfinished business come before the board? New business, item 4A. If you'd allow me, I'll kick that off. We received a couple of letters from a couple of our customers taking issue with the way that a particular item in the board, in the review package, the bylaw review package was worded, and it has to do with compensation for the board. And I referred the matter to Andrew, and I'll let him speak to it, on the path that if we choose to take in the present time while people are still voting. My position, this is just me, is that I don't want to tamper, and that's my word, I don't want to tamper with the voting process until it's concluded. A recommendation has come to me that we send out a letter to every voter saying that a particular item in the review packet that they've already received and hopefully read is going to be excluded, set aside, or compromised. And I am personally opposed to that. I think that, and maybe I'm overcooking this, but we'd be tampering with the voting process, if you will, and its sanctity that we hope that people agree with that on that. So, Andrew, let me front you up because you and I have been discussing this matter, and I know you've discussed this with staff.
Yes. Thank you. And Bob, to stay Open Meeting Act compliant, this was a late addition to the agenda. It was past the four-day posting requirement, so we can discuss it. But the board needs to find that there is some exigency to doing it, and I think there is because this involves the upcoming vote at the annual meeting, and that it's something that needs to be discussed now. So the board would need to make a motion, second, and pass by at least a two-thirds vote for us to continue on the item and take action. My recommendation is that you do so, and then we can jump into it.
Okay. The motion should be that we, do you want to frame the motion up?
Sure. Yeah, the motion would be that there is a need for the water company to discuss this item now. You're not taking action on it. You're just adding it to the agenda. So there is a need to take action on this item and to have it added to the agenda.
Okay. Can somebody move that?
I'll move that.
Dan, thank you.
Second.
I'm unclear as to what we're doing.
Okay. Andrew?
Today's agenda or to the annual meeting agenda?
Thanks, Andy. Let me clarify that. This is just to add the discussion item to today's agenda. Because this item didn't come up until after we had already posted the agenda, to stay compliant with the Open Meeting Act, we have to have the board move to add it to today's agenda so that you can discuss it and direct staff to take action or not. So that's the motion, just adding it to today's agenda.
Okay. Dan, you moved approval?
He was the first.
Second?
Yeah, I seconded.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? Okay.
Thank you. So,
why don't you go ahead?
Thank you. So, what this item concerns, as Bob said, is the director compensation section in the proposed bylaws amendment. As you may all recall, back in March, I brought a packet of proposed amendments to you for review. And one of the issues we discussed was the proposed director compensation item. So if you look at the email in your packet or the email that you received from me a couple days ago, there's two different versions of the language on director compensation. And they can be summed up that one has a blank in it, where I was asking you for some direction on what to put within the blank. And the other version is the one that you directed me to include, which is the version that says director compensation shall be resolved by the board in the future by resolution during a meeting. So what happened is inadvertently the version that includes the blank is the one that the shareholders received by mail. So it's likely that each of you received this version. That's the only significant error in the version that the shareholders received, but it did generate some questions. Why is there a blank? What happens if the blank is filled in with an exorbitantly large number? That sort of thing. So after talking with Bob, after talking with Lee and Dave, we thought it was appropriate to bring it back to you to discuss what to do, if anything, about this. And part of the helpful background on this is that there have only been a couple of questions relative to the number of shareholders you have. Folks have been asking. Dave and Lee can correct me if I'm wrong. They've been the ones fielding questions, but I don't think there's been outrage about it. But there has been questions about what was intended and why that spot was left blank. The other helpful context on it is you're already receiving votes. Votes are pouring in at this point. So folks are looking at this. They're understanding it, and votes are coming in. So, you know, if you do take some action, and we can discuss a couple of options, there is sort of a question of what happens to the folks who have already voted and have already weighed in on this one way or the other. So, you know, there's a couple different options, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have about what's going on, but there's a couple different options. One is take no action, let the vote resolve. When questions come in from shareholders, I'm happy to field them, or staff can field them, but the response is simply, there was an error. The wrong version of that section went out. What was intended by that is that the directors would set compensation in the future, and that's exactly what would happen here. If this version is passed by the shareholders, you would have the opportunity under the new updated bylaws to amend the bylaws at a future meeting through the process that's laid out in the bylaws, and that's exactly what you do. You fill in the blank after having a meeting, discussing the item, getting background, and setting a number. So that's option number one, take no action. Option number two is, and this is the option that Bob was referencing earlier, we tell the shareholders there was an error in the version that was sent out to you. Therefore, we are going to take that section out of the bylaws entirely for consideration at the annual meeting, and we'll take it up at a different time. So essentially, we'll leave director compensation at the status quo, which is no compensation, until it comes up at a future bylaw update. That, again, leaves the question of what happens to the folks who have already voted, who have already weighed in on this version, even in error, and decided yay or nay on it. And I think that's a problem, because it's not respectful of the folks who have already voted on this and formed an opinion. The third option is to mail corrected language for Article 3 to all of the voters. We're getting very tight on doing that, and there would be some significant expense for the water company to mail out to all of the shareholders just to correct one error. So I'm not sure that that's a recommended option, but it is one of your options. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you have. We are looking for some direction, even if it's to just not take any action at this point. But we do need some direction, and once I have that, then water company staff will act on it, and I will update the couple of shareholders who I've been in contact with about this item to let them know which way the board has decided on it.
So, Andrew, that's a good summary. But reading your letter email, there's still a clause in there that the directors serve without compensation, right? That clause is still in there.
There isn't. There is a clause in there about officers serving without compensation.
Right.
And frankly, Bill, that's confusing, and we should clean that up. I should have caught that. It's a holdover from the existing language, but it's not a fatal inconsistency to this item getting passed. But it is cause for cleanup.
Maybe so, but yeah, I agree, but basically, we're serving without compensation. So the intent of the compensation was that if the board decided that one member or attending meetings or whatever, I think was a discussion, that we would appropriate compensation, but it wasn't like a compensation for a yearly annual. We didn't describe what the compensation is.
Nope.
Right.
I think if there's a procedure to amend the bylaws after the vote, then we should leave the vote as it is. And then at our meeting, after we know whether it's approved, I mean, it may not be approved, so it doesn't, then it's a null point, right? It's mute. But if the new bylaws are approved, then we would take all the comments and then determine whether or not we needed to do an amendment. So this may not be the only issue or language that we want to amend. It's not unusual to have an amendment to a document like this. So is there a procedure to amend it?
Yes. That's one of the big changes in the updated bylaws, is the board would have the opportunity to amend the bylaws. You'd have to do it through a meeting process. You'd have to, be fully briefed on what the changes are, but you wouldn't need to mail out the changes to the shareholders ahead of time. You'd need to go through the process that's spelled out in the amended bylaws, which I think includes posting on the website for a certain number of days, summarizing, basically giving notice before you make these changes.
All right, so there would be an opportunity for public comment. So I would say, I'll be straightforward. If there's a procedure to amend it after the vote, if it's approved, assume it's approved, and that procedure involves public comment, then I would say we wait until we get all the votes in and then amend it if we decide to, because this may not be the only comment.
What if we posted something on our webpage that this particular item was inadvertently included? And that, some legalese language that, explains that, at this point, the status quo, of the existing bylaws would prevail. I think we have to be really careful here because, and not fall into the same black hole or dark hole that, the Homeowners Association has fallen into, where the board has had over time developed a lot of unilateral decision making for the HOA that many homeowners object to. And quite honestly, I'm not one of those that's been particularly vocal about the decision making grab that the HOA is over time engaged in. But I think as it relates to the integrity of the work that we do, we need to be really careful that we don't set ourselves up for public critique.
Agreed.
I think that would
be a problem. Certainly in my tenure, the board has done a great job and has, I think, developed a great deal of goodwill in the community. Yeah, we have a handful of, naysayers that will always throw mud in our
face. But the problem with changing
completely off the table and leaving the status quo as it has been.
If you'd have to send all the, you'd have to figure out who's voted, who hasn't voted, and then you'd have to go back and send everything out and start all over again if you change it. Because somebody's going to protest that you've already send it out and vote, and how can you change it because you don't like, did you count the votes? You set yourself up for fraud accusations, even if you're not being fraudulent, if you change it. Because people aren't voting on the same document. I'm not sure it'll be a legal vote if we change it now. We'd have to change it and start all over again, and then the people that have already voted could call us out on procedures. So I don't think we can change.
And Bill, frankly, it would be thorny to do it that way, simply because people have already voted on it. It's already been shown. The argument that the water company would use is, there was an inadvertent error in the version that went out to you. Therefore, because it was erroneous to have a blank in it, the shareholders can't be asked to adopt something that was an error, and therefore that section needs to be excised. But I agree with you. Even that argument is difficult because folks have already voted on it. And because we would not be sending them this notice with the 30 days required for a bylaw amendment, the process would be strange.
So the blank, if you do the face value, the what they call the black letter, or the what is the common meaning of the text? If it's blank, then that means it's zero.
No.
I think that argument can be made.
Well, yeah, I think the judge would rule that way. So I think if it had to go to court, but so I think it comes across as zero right now. What did we mean it to be?
That language was for discussion before the board. It was not for adoption at all. I never intended for anything to go out with a blank in it. But I agree with you. For messaging and for legal purposes, the water company could certainly say, you treat that blank as a zero at this point. And that is an issue that the board will deal with in the future through the bylaws amendment process. Inconsistent, again, with their fiduciary duties. As you all know, you're all fiduciaries to the water company and the shareholders. So, you know, to the extent that somebody is concerned that that blank is going to say $10,000, $1,000, anything, that's an unfounded fear.
I mean, we have an argument for the amendment. I mean, if you look at the long-range planning committee, those guys that are on our team, they do a lot of work. I mean, they do a lot of real, you know, work there that has... that we use that information. They spend a lot of time. So, I mean, that would be part of the consideration. But right now I would say it reads zero. I think it would be worse if you, and I won't say anything after this letter, is that it'll be worse if you send out a letter because it's just not, you've already started the vote. So,
you know, the whole process of voting and its sanctity, we are asking our shareholders to accept or deny or agree or disagree or to say yes or no on the document that we've given to them. And I think to keep this in its proper perspective, thus far, only two people have raised this issue. Out of how many ballots we sent out? 2,700?
2,000.
2,000? Okay, and I can, without getting into specific numbers, we are getting ballots have come in, and we are counting them as we are, they're being counted as they're coming in, and to say that this matter has drawn any attention from our voting membership would be an understatement. Without getting to the specific numbers, the response thus far from the voters on our question, do you approve our proposed adoption of the changed bylaws, to say it's overwhelming would be an understatement. And to keep this matter closer to reality, quite frankly, if someone takes issue with one of the changes we are proposing and it does not agree with it, then they can exercise their vote and vote no. That's what we're asking them to do, is to vote on the package and accept it. So I would offer, and I want to echo something Andy said about the integrity of our process is not being questioned, but we are asking the question, under the circumstances, what is the best thing we can do? What would be the best practice in this case? And that's, we don't do anything. Let the people complete the vote and have the matter brought up before the board. We will then be empowered to make changes where necessary. If the board feels that Section 6 on compensation should be reworded, reworked, et cetera, then we'll do so.
Isn't our goal to provide legitimate reimbursed expenses for those members who can't get where they're going? We're not talking about any other compensation other than reimbursement, correct?
Reimbursement's not compensation. If you pay somebody's travel expense, expenses. They don't count that as income. Compensation would be income.
At our goal. What is our goal?
Our goal is to provide us with an opportunity, if we choose to do so, to compensate members of the board, and it reads, for attendance at meetings, day service rendered, etc. I have been compensated, for example, having to travel to Stockton to meet with some attorneys over a particular matter, and the water company gave me a mileage check. I didn't ask for it, but they did. So I think the block on this, on compensation as portrayed in Section 6, from where I sit in the world, is fairly clear. And the board, with the approval of the proposed adoption, will have the power to mitigate that if we choose to do so. I just think the question before us, should we take some action now? And I would propose in the strongest terms that we do not.
Okay, got it.
And Jeff, just as a reminder, it's been quite some time since we talked about the various approaches to this. And I think I told the board at one point in the last year that there's various approaches that agencies take to this. But the most common one is if there is going to be some compensation to the board to recognize the extensive amount of time that's put into preparing and attending meetings, it's usually to just give some, modest per diem. So it's very common to give a per diem for attending meetings in the range of $100 in the Sacramento area, maybe less in Calaveras County. But that's the idea. Instead of, the more complicated systems for, compensating you for the time spent, it's just to give you a flat rate for meetings attended, trains attended, that sort of thing. And that's the common approach.
Thank you.
Do I then hold that we're all in agreement that we're going to let the voting continue and close as scheduled, and not take any action at this point?
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree. Again, it goes to integrity and transparency, and personally, I wish it had never gone out in the package. I'm not sure who reviewed the package and, allowed it to go out this way. But I think the whole issue of director compensation is a nonprofit organization such as ours, sets a terrible precedent. And, I guess in some way I'm sorry I missed the March meeting, but that's on me, not on the board. But I don't think we should just stick our head in the sand and let the status, let the process play out. I think we, recognize that there's an error, and we go back and we communicate the fact that there's an error, and, let the voting restart.
All I can say at this point is the voting results that we are getting do not support that.
Andy, I would be comfortable making the interpretation that Bill suggested, that the dollar sign and the blank means $0, and I think that's well supported legally, and I'd be comfortable telling the handful of shareholders that have asked that is the board's interpretation of this, that it is essentially the status quo, but it's an issue that they may take up in the future. Is that any assistance to you thinking through this issue?
Well, see, that's, short answer is no. That's your legal interpretation. But I think the average shareholder would view a blank as a to-be-determined number that would be outside of the membership's ability to control. Fortunately, there's a discussion within the HOA that just is super suspicious of the HOA board of directors and their decision-making, And I want to make sure that we stay on the right side of their perception, not the wrong side. So, you know, obviously I only have one vote out of however many, you know, seven, I guess. So, you know, it sounds like, you know, from Bob's perspective, you know, let's proceed forward, you know, with, you know, his proposal. I don't agree with that. But, you know, if the majority rules or decides to support Bob, then it is what it is.
Well, I want you to feel comfortable, Andy. Don't ask me why. No, I mean, I think for money, it has to be expressed. It can't be implied. And the other thing is travel, gas mileage is not income. So we would have to define what we mean by the word compensation, whether that's income for work or reimbursement for gas mileage. If you're going to count gas mileage as compensation, you know, then it becomes a lot broader. So we would have to define what that means, because, like, if you work for United Way or some of the other nonprofits, you can deduct your mileage on your income tax. I mean, you can count that as a donation. But so anyway, the tax laws change every year. But yeah, as long as it's blank, I don't see where it's. There's no dollar amount appropriated in the bylaws. So I don't see it. And you also have a clause in there that says they serve without compensation. So it's, that clause is still in there.
Yes, that section is in the officer's section, and the way that it works legally, and again, I say this should be cleaned up, and I should have caught it before, but it says the vice president, the president, the secretary, the treasurer all serve without compensation. So there is no additional compensation to any of those officers of the water company over and above what might be set for them as board members. That is the way that we're handling that issue.
Andy, I agree with, I'm in complete agree with you, agreement with you on why and your position, and that's, except I don't want to do anything for the same reason. And let the voting conclude, and then we make the changes we're discussing accordingly, as opposed to doing something in the middle of the process.
So you're suggesting we let the voting continue, and then we make changes after the vote?
We'll have the power after the vote to do that. One of the proposals in dealing with this adoption is that we will have the wherewithal to change the bylaws as we see need. The option is, if we do nothing, is one option. The something option is that we go in during the voting stream, during the process, and change something. And I'm opposed to that. I don't think we should.
So we're still under the old bylaws, right?
That's correct.
So what do the old bylaws say about once you send out the vote, can it be rescinded? Can it be changed? Can you declare it null and void and do it over again without counting the vote? I mean, do you have the power?
Yeah, there's nothing in the bylaws about that at all.
Right.
But in the state law?
There are no offhand. I have to look.
Right. So, but I mean, it's a corporation, right? A nonprofit. So there's rules about, I mean, like Pfizer or Bristol-Myers or Merck or somebody sends out bylaws or something. They can't change it if they don't. I mean, they would say we're changing it because we, I mean, you've already started counting the votes or not? I don't know.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
All right. So you've already started getting the vote, so it makes it even harder. I just think you create more problems if you rescind it.
Andy, one thing that water company staff talked about doing is, regardless of the action taken by the board, putting something on the website in the bylaws amendment section to explain what happened here. Is there a response there that you think would be helpful in explaining this issue?
Well, I think, you know, I suggested something being posted on our website that, you know, clarifies, you know, this particular matter. I don't know that, you know, one of my struggles is I know that people don't read. The fact that we have overwhelming support for the recommended changes in the bylaws is a function of people don't read. You know, there's only two people that dug in deep enough to see that there was something about director compensation that seemed to be questioned. What's that?
Only two people who care.
Well, that's true.
Well, and to be clear, one of the people at least, I don't know about the other, but the one that I was corresponding with actually didn't have an issue with this beyond the fact that it was blank and I think quite rightly thought that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, you know, clearly my concern is in the minority, so let's move on. Mine is getting away here.
Is there a way we could post something on the website to clarify what we were intending, like Andy's suggesting?
Yes, we could put a statement on the website that says there was an error in this specific section. It was intended to say something else. The board is not doing anything at this point because the board's official interpretation of this is that the blank means $0, and that's the status quo. And this is something that will come up in the future.
Yeah,
sorry about the air.
How many voters? I mean, then you're going to have somebody say that I've already voted. I didn't understand that. I was in favor of giving them money. I want my vote back. So how are you going to figure out how they voted and send it back to them? Because you've already started counting the ballots. That's like changing the vice president on election day. I mean, there's a certain date you can't change anything on. Like all these propositions that go out. There's typos in those all the time.
Yeah. And I would say I'm not proposing a legal reinterpretation. I'm proposing a public relations fix to it.
Yeah, but the effect of the public relations is changing the ballot. Even though physically you're not changing it and resending it out, you're saying that the ballot doesn't mean what it says it means. And you're publicly changing the ballot unilaterally. So
I don't really agree with that. I would think we're just providing a clarification. And one of the things I'm concerned about is I think the HOA board is, like Andy said, I don't want us to look like the HOA board that makes some odd decisions unilaterally. So I think
you'll look like the HOA board.
I disagree. I think that if we tell them up front that there was an error and that, you know, the vote's going to continue and we'll address this and possibly amend it later after the bylaws are passed, we're just being open and up front with them. I don't think we're open up with Pandora's box. I think we'll be open and up front.
Mm-hmm.
Other thoughts? It's kind of quiet.
I agree with you, Bob.
I agree too.
Well, you guys want to vote, or?
Well, I'm thinking about that. The process is already in place.
I'm just not sure we have the power to change it, so.
I think the discussion we're having, Andrew, you check me on this, but the discussion we're having is appropriate. However, I don't see any formal action on the part of the board. If we moved and seconded the fact that the voting is going to continue, well, it's going to do that anyway.
You're correct. There is no change to the status quo under what you've been discussing. Adding something to the website doesn't require board direction.
I would offer that once this is over with, this whole election process is going to be reviewed. For other reasons. Okay. I wanted the matter discussed. I wanted everyone to know that
the results are coming in. We have how many? We haven't counted all the ballots, but we generally get about 20% return.
Do you want a total count?
No, just, well, yeah, about how many ballots have been returned thus far. Generally, we get about 400.
Currently, as of yesterday, 145.
Okay.
65 of those have been counted already. 80 are yet to be counted.
The 65 that were counted, without getting into specific details, on this matter, the vote is beyond overwhelming in the affirmative. Part of that is, or a good piece of that is Andy's comment. I agree with that. I don't know if people read it or not, but that's up to them. You know, that's something we cannot force. I mean, they have the opportunity to do so. They choose to do so. And we know that two people have taken exception to it. Well, they have the right to vote against. And I don't want to be flippant about this thing, but I'm really concerned about tampering of any kind. And the appearance of evil that carries, I think, outweighs the fact that there may be a disruption in language. I personally don't see any problem with the language at all. So with that, we'll pass and go on to the next matter, if that's all right with the board.
I would like clarification, if I could, please, on posting anything on the website.
What I propose is I'll draft something up and send it off, David, and we can review. And once all of you have okayed it, then the league would post it.
Is that acceptable to the board?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
There's somebody's nodding in the affirmative. Got it. Okay. Item next is correspondence.
Yes.
Lee?
No.
Correspondence?
Sorry, Bob, you usually handle that. There was a letter that was written to the board complaining on the high base rate that she would like the board to rescind or look at again.
Yeah. Okay, has that been answered?
No. It's okay. To the board. I couldn't answer.
Okay. If you send it to me, I will.
Okay.
Item 4C is the annual shareholders meeting and the options. As you know, before the pandemic really set in, we agreed to move our annual meeting from the 6th of June to the 27th of June. Our bylaws currently call for us meeting on the first Saturday of June. And the options are open. I don't have a sense if we're going to draw any kind of a population on the 27th, and I have really no sense of where we can hold the meeting. I don't know if the lodge will be open.
What are the HOAs think?
HOA, they haven't decided what they're going to
do. No, yeah, they have. Well, sort of.
Excuse me, I did talk to Tony about the this weekend, and this weekend they're closed except for Flying Lake. For the annual meeting, they're not sure what they're going to do. They're thinking about having some kind of a virtual meeting type of thing, like a Zoom thing.
YouTube.
Maybe on YouTube.
YouTube.
I think this possibility of the state or the counties opening up to have large meetings like this in a month is pretty slim. They're opening up things very slowly. To go to a large, big meeting like this, I just don't think we'll be there in a month.
Well, in Alameda County, you can't hold any kind of a gathering with more than 12 people. That includes funerals. Does Calaveras County have a limit, currently a limit on the gatherings?
I think they're following the state mandate.
A dozen? 10 or 12?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah.
So, what happens legally if we don't have an annual meeting?
You reschedule. But you are required to have them.
So we could do it in October, for example. The mandate carries to the 1st of June, but I think that even the mandate would understand that under the current circumstances, we're unable to do that.
Yes. You can hold a special meeting in lieu of your annual meeting, and you can hold it
at any time
when it occurs, yeah.
Okay.
How would we then post or get the shareholders the results of the new directors?
We'll do that electronically.
Electronically?
Yes.
Okay. It depends apart on whether you have a quorum through the proxies that are returned. If you don't have a quorum through the proxies that are returned, we'll have an issue.
Yeah, that's part of the morass of this voting system. Okay.
Could we do a Zoom annual meeting so we could get it done? I mean, I've been on Zoom calls. I have, you know, several hundred people. You know, the participants can't really say anything. They can type chat. You know, they can type something to ask questions, and you just have a moderator.
Yeah.
It's just a thought.
So legally, yes, you can. And I've taught a couple of classes on how to hold meetings by Zoom. I could work with water company staff to get there, but it is difficult.
Could you please continue? I got somebody ringing my doorbell.
For sure. Yeah, nice talk.
To Sharon's point, you know, not every Zoom meeting has to be set up the way the one that we're on right now is set up, so that everybody sees each other, everybody can talk at any point when they unmute themselves. You can have it set up with permissions and things so that most of the shareholders can only talk at a given time, and things can be kept orderly. It is possible to do that. It just requires a bit of tech expertise and meeting skills. It would be possible, and it would be legal to do that.
I have a question.
I guess part of the question I would raise is, what would the content of the annual meeting be?
Say that again, Andy.
What would the content of the annual meeting need to be to, I guess, be a legal annual meeting?
We have to have 25% of the voters in good standing send us proxies so that we can hold our meeting. The meeting is basically a report on the previous year.
An announcement of the director and bylaw vote results. And Lee, you could count attendees at the Zoom meeting as part of the quorum requirement.
I'd have to make sure that they hadn't sent me a proxy already.
I agree. It would be difficult. There would be some serious record keeping involved.
But, right.
Yeah.
So if we winnowed down the agenda to bare necessities, this is something that could probably be done in a half hour. Mm-hmm. Or less.
What makes it go further is opening up the floor for questions.
I'm sorry, that's a good point. You do have to do that as well.
Or the number of talking heads. You know, we don't need Pedri, we don't need, you know, some other folks.
Right.
You know, if we've just developed an agenda that's, you know, sort of going to keep it simple, stupid model.
And that's what we did last year. Last year it took us, a little less than an hour to go through. No one had any questions. Everyone was happy with what we had done. No one had, the questions that came up were the same old questions, you know, that people returning all the time bring up again and again. It can be held relatively simply.
We need a Bob. back in the room?
I think we do.
I think you left us.
The other thing that we had been talking about, I'll just put this out there, was to for everyone who was giving a report, which would have been the treasurer, the long range, Dave and Bob, they all give reports on what happened during the whole year. We could have those just simply be put on the website again. We could either go video or just simply verbiage, text. Mm-hmm. Another option.
Well, we know how much they read.
Yeah. That's always been a problem.
Yeah, Bob's back. Be careful there, Sherry, what you think.
Oh, it's nice. Nice. I love the sensitivity. I got a crew working in the backyard. We're on shareholders meeting options.
Correct.
I think we've kind of gravitated to a...
Go ahead.
Huh?
Gravitated to...
Oh, well, I'm showing Dan as, you know, as the speaker. But anyway, I think we've gravitated to a Zoom meeting with a very consistent, stupid sort of format.
Okay.
Just get it done and get it out of the way. Would be my thought.
We can do that. Using Zoom, I do a meeting three times a week, and we have anywhere from 28 to 38 people on it, so long as they could all fit on the screen. And we can. There's a way to open Zoom to outside callers. We could go through the process of advertising, pick a date, advertise the meeting, and see what falls out.
Well, if you get like 50 people on Zoom, it's going to crash. I mean, I've been on meetings where you get too many people. It's if everybody's on video or something, it's going to crash. So you could have Zoom and then have people call in, maybe. I don't know.
I think that's pardon me. I think that's why the HOA has decided to, if they're going to do it on YouTube.
Well, the HOA wants to do it so they don't have to answer any questions.
They're your friend, right?
No, they're not. Not at all.
No, they're suspicious characters. But, all right, so we have to, there's other rules, like everyone has to be able to hear the person. Like in our group, everybody can hear everybody else, so it's not a problem. But if you get 100 people on Zoom, it may not be equal at everybody's computer.
There are aspects of Zoom where you can do it with 200 or 300 people. I've been on. It's just that I can't see everybody. I only can see the person who's speaking and who has control of the screen. So there's ways to do it. You know, I mean, we could do the live stream and then have people send us questions ahead of time if that's what we wanted, like a YouTube live stream or something. So, but you can do Zoom with 100 or 200 people. I've been on it with like 1,000 people. So, not 1,000, like 500 for schools. So, it's doable. It's not pretty. You might have to pay more for that. I mean, Andrew knows, right?
It's a webinar setup rather than a meeting setup. It's the same product, but it's a webinar, so it's much more tightly controlled, as Sharon's saying, where you only have a number of talking heads, probably the board and staff, and everybody else is a participant who can talk at the right time when they're unmuted, but that's it.
How about if the board is in agreement, I'll reach out and grab a two or three of you and we'll put together our best recommendation for this. Would that be agreeable? In other words, we'll research webinar, Zoom, and whatever else is out there. I don't know the YouTube thing. I don't think the YouTube thing's interactive.
Well, neither is the HOA, so.
Well, okay, if you would allow me that indulgence, I'll reach out to two or three of you, and we'll put together the profit of our best thinking. How's that? Yes? Andy, you're going to get volunteered, so you better smile.
The profit of our best thinking, huh?
Hey, you like that one, huh?
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, okay. Sharon, you volunteered, so you'll be working on it. And Jeff, you've been trying to ask a question all along this. I don't want to cut you out. You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
I don't know if you're talking to the dog or waving or what, so... Oh, okay. Okay. Item next is item 4D, report on monthly billing, invoices, receivables.
Carissa already did that.
Okay. Any questions about the billing results? I can tell you that I'm talking to the staff, we got about 10% of the customer base that reacted to the first billing, and perhaps 1% that has acted to the second one. So it's a huge drop.
I noted that the only thing I noted on the financials was that the AR compared to last year was double, and I wondered why.
That's going to be. Am I on? That's going to be kind of hard to say because last year we had everybody paid up front January, February, and this year we're doing every 2 months, so people are always going to owe.
Sure. Got it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions, comments about the billing process, incoming funds, et cetera? Okay. Item 4E on reportable items.
The reportable items you all have in your packet, one,
yep.
Two, three, four, five of them. Three are complete. The couple of them are still in progress and will remain so. New action items to add or reportable items to add. We were going to send the board a number of not connected households, so that you have a good idea of where we sit on areas that can be shut off in the new infrastructure improvement project. The other action item would be with Director Cover, General Manager, and possibly Tom Schneider giving input, the letter that would go to McClintock for forgiveness of the USDA loan. Third new action item would be regarding the bylaws. We were going to let the voting continue and take no action, but we were also going to post on the website clarification on the bylaws and what they should have read. And then I think there's one more. Hang on. Wrong page.
Annual meeting date.
Yep, the annual meeting. Well, the date, are we going to shoot to keeping it for the 27th? But Bob is going to check and research with a couple other board members the possible avenues for how we could hold this in an annual meeting. So four new to add.
Has Calaveras County lifted the shelter-in-place rule?
Yeah, but you can still, I mean, there's still the social distancing, and they haven't ordered us to do...
No, the state put into effect, and the county's adapted the shelter-in-place rule. It means you stay home.
We have all kinds of people coming up that aren't staying home.
Well, that's a different...
There was some clarification this morning on the Internet that would suggest that stay-in-place or sequester at home is the state mandate, and that supersedes any local county or municipality ruling?
I think it would.
So, you know, I think the answer to your question is yes, we're supposed to still stay at home.
Got it. However.
However, you can go
where you want.
You can go to church. You can go to restaurants. You go to grocery stores. I don't even think face masks are mandatory.
Nope.
But,
Really?
No.
Okay. Okay. Are there any other items to come before?
Stay at home except for essential needs. So that's why they wanted to change the church to essential need. So that's why you can go to the supermarket.
Got it.
Yeah, but here in Arnold, you can go eat inside at Round Table. So, yeah, it's dine-in now.
Correct.
So.
I don't think the pizza's that good.
You can go to Serafina's, Bob.
Yeah, you're right, Andy. Anything else come before the board? Well, I thank you for your time and your indulgence and your comments this morning. I wish you all good health. I'll be reaching out to some or all of you on the annual meeting piece, and we'll come up with a process, and we'll come up with a date. I think we'll do it that way. And I appreciate your comments, especially about this voting matter. If we don't all agree, then good. If we all agreed on everything, then what would be our purpose, quite frankly? Andrew, thank you for the work that you've done and the little piece you're about to do. And I wish you all good health, and we'll do this again soon, as I said. any last comments?
Yeah, Bob, I think there's an action item for staff. Speaking of communications, there was some confusion in the written material about the annual meeting date.
Oh, that's been changed. That's on the website. It was corrected from the 23rd to the 27th. That was on the day that you brought it to my attention.
Okay. We're not going to hold with the 27th, as I understand. Correct. We're not going to stay with the 27th. We're not going to stay with any date until we figure out a process on how we're going to hold it. Do I have that right?
The website also says that we may not hold it, and we'll let them know as soon as possible. Or if we hold it, we'll let them know what date. We're covered.
Well, we ought to put out it's not going to be on the 27th, if that's what we all agree with.
Are you sure?
Well, I don't know that we've agreed to
right.
that. I would argue let's leave it there and engineer whatever processes or approach we need to fit the date.
I can live with that.
Yeah. I
would agree with that too. That's a thing to do if we can have it on the date we said we were going to have it. It's one way or another.
Well, there were two dates allowed. One was the 23rd. That was an error. That's been corrected. Okay, so we agree the annual meeting will be held in some format on the Saturday the 27th.
Correct.
Okay. All we have to do is figure out how we're going to do it. All right. I'm good with that.
Okay.
Anything else with the good in order? Tom, thank you for all your work as always.
Great.
Thank you. It says Paul Penny, but it looks like Dave. Thank you. All right, guys. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you all too.
Thank you, y'all.
It's Memorial Day. It's Memorial Day Monday. Let's remember. Memorial Day Monday. Let's remember.
Just stay home.
I will. Yeah, you and the my next door contingent.